Hey, Tom Tilley here. This is the Hack Podcast. Today was the last day of Parliament in Canberra.
I will fight them on this. I will seek to stop them doing this.
In a moment, you're going to find out why it was a bit more like the last day of school. And have you heard of live webcamming? It's a relatively new kind of porn. Well, maybe not to you. Today, you're going to meet a former webcammer who turned her experiences into a new Netflix film.
I wanted people to understand that sex work is work. It's just a job.
That interview in just a moment.
Hack, Australia's most notorious drug trafficker, now with a question mark over his conviction.
This could cost hundreds of millions of dollars and put bad people out on the streets.
It is such an extraordinary breach of a lawyer's duties that it's almost breathtaking.
On Triple J.
An extremely dangerous secret has come out into the open in Victoria this week. It relates to the famous gangland wars where dozens of people with criminal links were shot, often in public. Think Carl Williams, Tony Mockbell, Mick Gatto, massive shipments of ecstasy. Yep, these are the real-world events that inspired the Underbelly TV series. And because of this week's revelations, some of these criminals could have their sentences overturned. Now, the revelation is that a barrister who works for a lot of these criminals was also handing information over to the police. Lawyer X, as she's known, says she's helped with the arrest of 386 people. And now that the secret's out, there's a high risk that she'll be murdered. This week, the Victorian Premier called a Royal Commission into the matter. It's a fascinating and a frightening story that is going to play out right through next year. Here's Joe Lauder to explain it from the beginning.
To understand this whole saga, we need to go back to this.
Police haven't ruled out setting up a special task force to examine the increasing number of unsolved underworld murders in Melbourne.
An infamous Melbourne crime figure was shot dead in front of his children.
There was people running everywhere. It was just, everyone had sort of lost it.
The gangland wars in Melbourne in the early 2000s were a fight for turf between different crime syndicates that spilled onto the streets.
Police investigating Melbourne's gangland war are scrambling for clues after another underworld figure was shot dead last night.
Moran became the 23rd victim of Melbourne's ongoing gangland war.
At the time, the person known as Lawyer X was working as a high-profile barrister defending a bunch of notorious gangland criminals like Tony Mockbell, Carl Williams and their mates. These kind of killings hadn't been seen on a scale like this in Australia before, and there was a lot of pressure on the police to stop this. Now we know who helped police shut it down and how desperate the police got.
I helped because I was motivated by altruism rather than for any personal gain.
These are the words of Lawyer X. At the height of these killings in 2004, Lawyer X started informally helping out the police and then became a formal police informer in 2005 and continued until 2009. So for 4 years, she was feeding police information about her own clients and their networks.
What led me to do that was my own frustration with the way in which certain criminals, Carl Williams, were seeking to control what suspects and witnesses could and could not do or say to police via solicitors.
Lawyer X's identity has been suppressed for her protection, but this is from a letter she wrote that was released in court documents this week. In it, Lawyer X gives her side of the story.
My motivation in assisting police was not for self-gain, but was rather born from the frustration of being aware of prolific large commercial drug trafficking, importations of massive quantities of drugs, murders, bashings, perverting the course of justice, huge money laundering and other serious offences all being committed without any serious inroads being made by police.
And she reckons her info was a game changer.
There were a total of 386 people arrested and charged that I am specifically aware of based upon information I provided to Victoria Police.
She also gave information about this record drug bust.
Australian police have seized the world's largest haul of ecstasy.
15 million tablets of the banned amphetamine ecstasy were found in 3,000 cans of Italian tomatoes shipped into Melbourne more than a year ago.
So her information helped put away some of the biggest criminals in Australia, including Tony Mockbell, and probably helped end that bloody period for Melbourne. But that could all be undone.
We begin today with the gangland scandal in Victoria, which could see dozens of criminals released from jail.
On Monday, the High Court lifted suppression orders on a case involving Lawyer X and Victoria Police, and it all became public. Up until then, the Victorian Police had been trying to stop the Office of Public Prosecution from letting some of Lawyer X's clients know that she'd double-crossed them. Straight after, the Victorian Premier Dan Andrews announced a royal commission.
We think it's appropriate to have this highest and most formal type of inquiry to give us the answers we need and the certainty that this could never, ever happen again.
This scandal has rocked the police and the legal profession. For police, people are outraged that they would knowingly use a lawyer as an informer, and there's pressure on the current police commissioner to explain his role and what he knew.
You know, what has happened here is just completely unprecedented.
The legal profession is also scathing about the lawyer who betrayed her own clients. Dr. Matt Collins, QC, is the president of the Victorian Bar.
But it doesn't appear to have any analogue anywhere else in Australia either.
Matt says Lawyer X broke the number one rule of a lawyer.
It is such an extraordinary breach of a lawyer's duties that it's almost breathtaking. No one has ever heard of a lawyer acting in the way which has been alleged before.
Matt Collins also says the police should have known better, and it's insane that this even happened in the first place.
The thing that I think is most concerning is why no one within the hierarchy appears to have said, stop, this is cutting corners, breaking rules, and it's not the way in which justice is administered in Australia.
It seems like quite a desperate move, right?
Yeah, well, look, I've heard it said in the media over the last week that this was a desperate time and sometimes desperate times call for desperate measures. I mean, that view is profoundly wrong. You know, at a time of crisis, we should adhere to the best possible standards, not the worst standards. And so I don't have any time for that argument at all.
Hack on Triple J.
Joe Lauder reporting. Poor lady, everyone knows who she is, says one listener. Another listener says it's not right what she did. It undermines the justice system. I'd love to hear your reaction. 0439 757 555. Let's find out more about Lawyer X and the Royal Commission. Anthony Dowsley is a crime reporter for the Herald Sun. Anthony, thanks for joining us. For young listeners who weren't around hearing the news of the gangland killings last decade, can you paint the picture of how bloody this time was in Melbourne's history?
Well, this was a time when you had gangsters becoming notorious. And you had people like Tony Mockbell and Carl Williams and certain hitmen such as Andrew Benjamin, who were making headlines regularly. This turned into a political issue where people in the public, it wasn't just a fear that criminals were killing other criminals. Some of the killings were playing out in the public, such as the killing of Jason Moran in outside a kids' football clinic in Essendon.
And a few years ago, your paper was about to print a front page story about Lawyer X, but you were stopped at the time. So how long have insiders and I guess how long have you known about this whole incident, this informant?
Well, in March 2014, we got press during that night, we were injuncted in a Supreme Court hearing by Victoria Police and their lawyers, because they obviously wanted to stop it. There were publications because we were able to convince, make an argument that we could report some of it. So we were never going to name 3838, but we called it the Lawyer X scandal, and we continued to report on that for four and a half years, and through a series of suppressions. We were able to only report very limited amounts of some of the progress and some of the things that happened during an incredible time in Victoria's history, and some unprecedented and obviously extremely concerning ways in which the convictions were dealt with.
However she went about it, do you think that she did play a vital role in stopping this period of crime and violence?
I'm not sure about that. I think that it's more about gaining intelligence and gaining convictions and embedding oneself with a criminal set and being able to pass information not only back to Victoria Police but possibly the other way as well.
Okay, well, she says she did this out of altruism and there wasn't any financial interest for her. Why do you think she did it?
It's a big question. There is a person who wanted to be a somebody, to be, I guess, held with some to make a name. So there was some of that involved, and it was, I guess, some hyperactivity of some sorts that was behind all of what was going on. I certainly have heard the story before, you know, the weeks gone by about how this person came into being in former 3838 and the altruistic notion there, but there's probably more to it than that.
Interesting. You're listening to Crime Reporter from the Herald Sun, Anthony Dowsley. We're talking about Lawyer X, this huge story that's exploded this week from Victoria. It sparked a royal commission on the text line, disgusting from the police and the lawyer. Justine from Maitland says, have we forgotten that these people are violent criminals? They don't deserve more taxpayer money investigating this. The informant was giving information and criminals to the police. Another listener says, justice seeks facts. If she revealed salient facts that were being hidden, then that's okay by me. Another person says, Lawyer X is a hero. And that's a really interesting point. I mean, how are people in Melbourne responding to this story, Anthony? I imagine some people see her as a hero, some people see her as a villain, because even though she completely breached her duty as a lawyer by informing on her clients, she says she played an important role in getting these people arrested.
Well, I guess that those people that have that view are saying that you you clean up this crime at any cost. But what it really did do is undermine the judicial system and its integrity. You have to have two arms that work separately. And the right to a fair trial underpins the whole system. It was a very effective way of being able to gain results. And as Lawyer X says herself, it was extremely successful in getting 380-odd arrests and people arrested and charges. But at what cost to the judicial system? Because everybody has the right to a fair trial.
Yeah, on the text line, Aidan in Mildura says, at least we have the next Underbelly series. That's a very good point. Last question to you, Anthony Dowsley, before we move on to another high-profile barrister from Melbourne, Peter Farris.
Yes.
What do you think the chances are that she's going to be murdered?
The person in question obviously will have a contact with police. And obviously there is records of fears for her life going back some time, but it has to be stated that this is no secret. The underworld is well aware before the events of this week of the status of Lawyer X.
Mm.
And in some ways that there is a protection around Lawyer X because Lawyer X could be subpoenaed to many matters.
Interesting. All right, Anthony, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Anthony Dowsley from the Herald Sun. He's a crime reporter there, and we're talking about the case of Lawyer X. The High Court made a decision, which we found out about this week, to reveal her story as a barrister who was also a police informant, which is a massive breach of her duties as a lawyer. Let's go to another very well-known barrister in Melbourne, Peter Farris. He worked for decades and defended a lot of these criminals who were locked up in relation to the gangland wars. Peter, thank you so much for joining us. You know a lot of these criminals that are locked up, supposedly on Lawyer X's information. You work for them. How are they going to be responding to this week's events?
Well, what's happened to them this week is that there seems to be a royal commission which is going to investigate all the convictions. And that Royal Commission will have to look at the evidence in the cases that these people were convicted of, and it will have to compare that with whatever the police records are as to what Lawyer X told them about it, and see whether this was illegally obtained evidence and whether they are wrongly convicted. Now, how that'll play out, we just have to wait and see. Some might get a recommendation for an acquittal. Some might get a recommendation for a new trial. some might get their sentences reduced. We don't know until we know the facts, and we know nothing at the moment.
So if this puts some of those criminals who may become, have their convictions overturned back onto the streets of Melbourne, how's that going to go down with the Melbourne public?
Well, nobody is going to like that, obviously, but that doesn't mean that this sort of behaviour could be used to obtain convictions for anybody, whether the best people or the worst people in the community should not have a treacherous lawyer acting for them, and at the same time who was a registered police informer. I mean, it's absolutely unprecedented, I think, probably anywhere in the world.
So,
and, yeah. I mean, there's always informers. I mean, police use informers all the time. But I've never, ever heard of a defence barrister being a registered informer. It's unbelievable.
So what do you hope comes out of this Royal Commission?
Well, I don't hope for any particular result. I just hope that it's done thoroughly, it's done publicly, and we move on from this terrible time. I think it's probably destroyed a great deal of trust in lawyers, and rightly so, because you go and see your lawyer, how do you know whether your lawyer's a registered police informer or not? You don't. So why would you talk to them? I mean, it raises tremendous problems. The police knew that this was all illegal and improper, yet they went ahead with it for years. The High Court this week said, and I'm quoting, the Victoria police were guilty of reprehensible conduct, and they sanctioned atrocious breaches of the sworn duty of every police officer.
Yeah, it's a pretty strong statement. Peter Farris, thanks for joining us.
Okay, bye-bye.
On the text line, one person says, thank you, Lawyer X. Grace says, yes, she absolutely did play a vital role. It was fundamentally the right thing to do. She stopped more people being killed.
This is about Australia's safety, and Bill Shorten is a clear and present threat to Australia's safety because he's so obsessed with politics that he cannot see the national interest.
On Triple J.
If you thought your last day at school was a wild time, well, there's been a whole bunch of, well, not fun, but a lot of games in federal parliament today. Today is the last scheduled sitting day of the year in federal parliament, and it seems they got about as much done as you do at your last day of school. At 10:30 this morning, you heard those fighting words from the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, and he basically set up a political death match over two bills. And one is about the government's encryption laws, which many of you expressed your concerns about here on Hack. The other bill was a push from Labor and the crossbenchers to get asylum seekers off Nauru and Manus. And guess what? Neither bill passed. Shalala, it's been a messy last day in Canberra.
My God, Tom, I have been covering politics for nearly 8 years, and this is one of the messiest days I can ever remember. It was just absolute chaos from start to finish. It all started, as you mentioned, because Labor, the Greens and the crossbenchers, that is minor parties or independents, wanted to pass changes that would make it easier for asylum seekers to get medical transfers to Australia. Now, given the diminished numbers that the government has in the House, that was a real possibility. It could have actually happened very easily, and that would have been super embarrassing to the government. In fact, nothing like that would have happened for 90 years.
Wow.
Now, it's huge. And the last time it happened in 1929, the government went straight to an election and they lost. So obviously the government did not want to lose control of the House. It wanted to do all it could to stop that bill from coming up. And the way they did that was by filibustering. That is, filling up time using all these procedural kind of motions. They filibustered for 2.5 hours to make sure that they hit this, basically this 4:30 deadline, which would meant that it was too late if that passed the Senate to then go to the House, because the House had adjourned for the whole year. They're not back till February.
Okay.
And that's what happened. Basically, they managed to talk it out for more than 2 hours, and that bill did not pass the Senate until after 4:30.
Right, so the government have essentially called an end to Parliament before passing these encryption laws, these national security laws, which they were telling us over the last few weeks were vital to our security and needed to be passed before Christmas.
Exactly. So because they filibustered for so long, they didn't actually have time to debate the encryption laws in the Senate. So these laws are actually being debated right now, but they're expected to have a few amendments, and so they can't pass into law with those amendments until the House gives it the tick and flick. Now, the House has already risen, so they're not back till February. So this whole, like, political line that the government's been running, that these laws are crucial, they're really important to national security, we have to have them before Christmas, basically it was the reason that those laws did not pass.
Yeah, really interesting. Kind of symbolic, do you think, of the way the Parliament's gone this whole year?
Yeah, and it's a really bad sign for what's to come. Basically, we only have a handful of days before the next, potentially the next election. We know that handful of sitting days, sorry, yes. So we have a handful of sitting days before the next budget, which is going to be in April, and then the government's expected to go to an election pretty soon after that. We're really anticipating a May election. So for those handful of days when everyone is back here, which is just going to be chaos like this from here on in. So, yeah, it's a bit of a look into what's to come.
Yeah, and interesting on the asylum seeker bill, because Scott Morrison has been making the point that since he took over as Prime Minister at the end of August, he's actually got 100 children off Nauru. And then here we had this bill that was essentially pushing to do a similar thing, get people off Nauru and Manus for similar reasons, and he was pushing back on it. And now here we are, the bill hasn't passed, and maybe he'll still work to those ends to get those remaining 10 children off Nauru.
Yeah, so we know you said the 10, that's right. And 4 of those 10 are about to be resettled in the US as part of that third country agreement that we have with the United States. So there's only really very few left. A lot of those, they're going to be trying to get them off before Christmas. But the question is still what happens after they come here, because the government has still said there's no way that they're going to resettle in Australia. Mm. They might be here for now, but there's still absolutely no clarity about what happens to these kids and their families once they're here, whether or not they'll be resettled in a third country, whether they'll get to stay here for a long time. We just don't know. And that is one of the things that I think the crossbench and Labor are hoping to iron out.
Yeah, well, if those last 6 go to the US and the last 4 get taken off, we'll keep you updated here on Hack. Shalala, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Hack. Oh, my God, we did it.
Guys, welcome. Anybody who just arrived, we just hit top 50.
What are you even saying? That she found somebody who looks exactly like you, convinced them to buy your account?
Honestly, if I was going to go through all that trouble, I'd probably try for someone in the top 10.
On Triple J with Tom Tilley.
Have you or has anyone you know ever watched live webcam porn? It's a relatively new kind of sex work where simple webcam technology allows performers to broadcast anything from just chatting to explicit sex acts. And it's relatively easy to do. It's relatively safe compared to other kinds of sex work. It can also be lucrative, but it doesn't come without its hazards. A new Netflix film explores life on the inside of the screen. It's called Cam. And it's a horror film where Alice, the main character, is trying all kinds of stunts to get boosted in the cam girl charts. And then it gets really weird in a Black Mirror kind of way. Now, this movie Cam was written by someone who was actually a cam girl herself. Her name is Iza Matsai. And here she is on Skype from the US. Iza, thanks for joining us. For people that haven't seen it, can you give us the basic storyline without too many spoilers?
Totally. It's about a cam girl who wakes up one day and she's been replaced online with an identical replica of herself. And so it's like a horror thriller while she tries to figure out who's taken over her show.
Iza, you're in such an interesting position, having had experience as a cam girl and then writing this film. What did you want to kind of say with this film?
I think it was really important to me to tell a different kind of story with a sex worker. I think in horror, sex workers are often just these props that are kind of killed off first, or they're the butt of the joke. And so I really wanted to humanize a sex worker and bring an audience inside of her experience and have them, you know, relate to her in a way that maybe they hadn't before. When I was a cam girl, I was very open about it. And I found, you know, a lot of people had very damaging reactions when I told them what I did. So I really wanted to correct that.
I think a lot of people watching it would be surprised or concerned about the way the competition in the rankings really drives the decisions the cam girls make. Were you concerned about how you would portray this whole industry and whether it would give people, you know, negative or positive connotations?
Definitely. And I think at the end of the day, you know, what I wanted to portray was what it is. There are cam sites that have ranking systems and, you know, some girls throw themselves into rank and some girls don't. I did quite aggressively on several occasions go for rank, and it was really fun, but it also was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And so for me, it was less about saying, you know, this is good or bad and just saying this is what it is. You know, we can all relate to competition. So, you know, more than anything, it was about bringing an audience inside this perspective where, you know, Alice does want the most likes and it's not so different from anyone wanting the most likes on their Instagram picture.
Yeah. And people do all kinds of things in life that they regret because they're trying to be popular. But I guess people might be concerned that in this space where it involves your body and sexuality, that the moments where you go too far could be really damaging. Do you think that that is the case, that some people do go way too far in this space because of competition?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the most of the sex workers that I know and cam girls that I've worked with know their boundaries. And some of their boundaries, you know, are farther out there than mine. And some of them are more conservative than mine. And I think what's more important than anything is just recognizing what your boundaries are, what you want to offer, and kind of sticking to that.
You're listening to Iza Matsai, a screenwriter and an ex-cam girl, and she's written a film called Cam that was released on Netflix just a few weeks ago. Iza, the key thread of your plot is that the main character, Alice, or Lola, which is her webcam name, has her account hacked by someone pretending to be her. And this actually has a loose parallel with your own experience, where your own cam videos were leaked to Pornhub without your permission. What did you want the film to say about those kinds of abuses?
I mean, for me, it's really important to get the message out that the person behind the screen is a person. And I think it's really easy to dehumanize people when we're only interacting with them through a computer. That's why we cyberbully each other, because we tend to forget that who we're talking to is an actual human being.
So that's one of the interesting messages that you're portraying through the film. What was the overall, I guess, sense that you wanted to give people about this line of work?
I wanted people to understand that sex work is work. It's just a job. And I think oftentimes we demand of sex workers that they either be empowered or we assume that they're victims. And we don't really demand that of any other career. And I think, you know, when I was a cam girl, people assumed that I was desperate for money or that I was somehow a victim, that I had been, you know, coerced into it. And that felt really terrible because it was something that I chose, something that I knew exactly what I was doing. And I was very proud of the work that I did.
And what did make you want to do it in the first place? And then why did you stop?
So I got into camming. I had actually always wanted to try sex work. I thought maybe I wanted to be a stripper. I always just like taking my clothes off, but I didn't know how to dance and I wasn't really sure how to get into it. And I was actually dating someone who was a sugar daddy and he showed me cam girls. And I found a couple girls that I really liked and I felt really inspired by them. And so I thought, hey, I'm going to try this. And I stopped ultimately, you know, I just started fizzling out. Like I stopped feeling creatively energized by my work. And I realized that, you know, ultimately it wasn't my end all career.
Yeah. Do cam girls make a lot of money?
It depends on the girl. I think Alice is a cam girl who's, you know, in the top, she's doing very well for herself. We kind of see her buying like a $4,000 couch or something. So, you know, she's clearly doing well. But camming is something like any other job, you really get out what you put in. Some girls make it their career and rise to the top and, you know, make a lot of money.
And how have you found the reaction to the film now that it's up on Netflix?
Lots of people seem to like it. Lots of people seem very frustrated with the ending, which I understand. But overall, I think people really like it. And more than that, cam girls have reached out to me and said, you know, that they feel like it's a really important film and that it makes them feel respected and seen in a new way. That's been really cool to witness.
All right, Iza, thank you so much for speaking to us on Triple J.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hack
on Triple J.
All right, that is it for the podcast today. Thank you so much for listening. Please tell your friends about it as well. We had some good results this week. We found out that we were in the top 10 most downloaded Australian podcasts from Apple, which is huge. We always want more people to hear these stories. So let your friends know about the podcast. I'll be back tomorrow with the next episode. Speak to you soon.